You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game. This is a documentary podcast. If you were coming for something that was not a documentary podcast, then you're in the wrong room. You're going to need to go down the hall and see Mrs. Jenkins at the customer service counter. It's the admissions counter. She's going to help you figure out what syllabus you've got, and she's going to direct you to the right room, okay?
Don't mention her eye.
Don't do
just
that.
Don't mention it.
Nope.
It's bad. Just and try not to stare.
Yeah.
Try not to stare. Stare middle of her forehead. Middle of her forehead.
Yep. That's good. If you're lucky, though, Mr. Walters will be there with her, and then he'll make a point to ask her about her eye while you're there because he thinks it's funny.
He does. The saving grace for Mr. Walters, though, is he makes cookies on Fridays. So if you're there on a Friday, good news. Almost always puts nuts in them, though, so if you don't like nuts or are allergic.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah.
I was down there. Never mind.
Hey, that was pretty good. Yeah. We had it going.
It's episode 227. It's
sure?
It's October.
I think you're right this time.
It's October 3rd. I'm Rob. That's Jason. How are you?
Oh, I am fantabulous.
Yeah? Yeah, good. That's good. Why so fantabuloso?
Because right now, Kickstarter for Unreal Estate.
Yeah.
Is about 215% funded.
That's pretty cool.
It's running at about, right now, about 500 backers, $11,000.
It's pretty cool.
Hey-o.
As of this recording. Only going to be better by the time this episode hits.
By the time this episode hits, I'm going to guess we're somewhere between 18 and 20,000.
I hope you're higher than that.
Well, it's only a few days away.
I know, but I hope.
I hope I'm higher than that, too, but I would be very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
We are... So yeah, can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, of course.
So we, it's going very well. We funded in less than 24 hours, just under. It was 23 and three quarters hours.
It's cool to be able to say that, though.
It is, though, right? The first thing I said to Kirkman was, dude, you got to make a little thing and put it on the picture, and he did.
Yes.
A little thing that says funded in 24 hours with an arrow. So it's went pretty well. We funded quick, and then we never really slowed down. So we did something with the stretch goals that's a little different, and it was neat because instead of doing like a bunch of little stretch goals in the front, we loaded it with three good, really good stretch goals at 9,000, 12,000, and 16,000, which were four new cards each. Instead of just doing it, set it up into two to where it's broken down. So the disadvantage of that is less stretch goals hitting, right? Which makes people excited. But the advantage to that is when you hit a stretch goal, it's like, hey, woohoo, lots of cool
it's
stuff.
It's a bigger deal, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that worked well. And we certainly never lost momentum, so I don't think it hurt us. Yeah, and people seemed genuinely excited about getting the cards. And I love it. People are downloading the print and play, right? And because we have the previews with the cards right on it for the next several stretch goals, people are actually making fake versions of those special cards and playing with them.
That's cool.
Which is super awesome.
That's great.
So I'm glad that we laid that out the way we did.
Yeah. That's
it's
smart.
Pretty exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I mean, congratulations, man. That's been going so well.
Yeah. And we've got some crazy more stretch goals to unlock. Some stuff people have asked for and that we, changed because people said, oh, can you do this?
Mm-hmm.
Said, let's figure out how. If you are a builder and you haven't backed it yet, I'd really appreciate it if you did. So it's only $18 with free shipping, or $28 if you want the game and the art book.
Mm-hmm.
And the art book is going to be really, really cool because it's got all of Corinne's awesome art in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really excited about that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have backed for that, for the level with the game and the art book. And I hope a lot more people do because it's Corinne's art and you deserve to see it.
Yep. Absolutely.
We've gotten some really good comments. I was excited about some of the comments we got from people. The most recent one, which made me really happy because I love this game, was somebody said, this game is really fun. And with all these new special cards that you're adding, I'm pretty sure this is going to replace Citadels for this weight of game. And I was like, oh, wow. No one tell Bruno Fiduti.
Yeah.
So, wow. Or tell him. Tell him that a guy he's never heard of.
Sure. That's high praise.
Yeah. I was like, wow.
That's cool.
I don't know that it earned that, but I'll take that.
Right on.
But it's been getting really good feedback from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah,
and,
deservedly so.
Yeah, thank you. And the artwork is selling it mm-hmm. big time. So yeah,
it's one of those things that people forget that Kickstarters, people back Kickstarters not because they know something is a good game, but because they think it looks like a good game.
Yep.
And presentation and art is so extremely important, and it needs to be a good game too.
Right.
Right. And you guys, because it's an easy print and play.
Yeah,
you've been able to leverage that really well. Right.
Yeah. With like Tycoon, that's a little harder.
It was a lot harder. Yeah.
But in that case, people are backing the value as well. Mm-hmm, right. They're mm-hmm. like, I know I'm getting a healthy discount from retail and look at all this stuff.
Right.
So,
right. Yes.
And because it's a bigger game, it's a lot easier to pack a ton of stuff in for stretch goals. Mm-hmm. We have to be a little more conservative about that because it's a deck of cards.
Yeah, sure.
But we did add a score tracker, which Chris is actually reworking based on some feedback.
Is he? Okay.
He's doing some testing to just see what else we could do with that.
Okay.
Some layout differences.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got a first player token that likely will get upgraded to a screen printed meeple, which is pretty exciting. So that's been announced. Ooh. So I can
say okay. I wasn't sure.
No, it's been announced. It's the $20,000 stretch goal gets it screen printed.
Excellent.
16 gets it. 20 gets it screen printed, I think.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then I think 18 gives us two more cards. And then as soon as we hit 12, we're going to announce more stuff. And I really want to announce more stuff. So yeah, I can't wait till we hit 12. Maybe tomorrow. Worst case, we'll hit it the next day. So
okay. So it'll be up by the time. It'll be announced by the time this episode goes up.
Oh, absolutely.
We still shouldn't talk about it, though. Just, you know.
No. I'm not going to. Right. So, yeah.
Cool.
But anyways, so I'm very happy with how it's going. I think Mark is doing a fantastic job
mm-hmm.
Of doing that. And we've been working with, so the team is myself, Mark, Heather, Chris, and Corinne.
Mm-hmm.
Heather does all of our digital stuff, like mm-hmm. our online stuff.
It's
super digital. So she's been really helpful with that, with some marketing ideas and stuff. And, Kirkman does his thing with the graphic design, which he's fantastic at. Mm-hmm. And this is such a breeze for him compared to the stuff he does for Dice Ate Me that, but yeah, no, he's been really fun and easy to work with. Cause I knew Chris decently well before, but I've gotten to know him a lot better and work a lot closer with him. And that's been fun. And then Corinne is just, as Mark says in the Kickstarter video, Corinne is just unparalleled. I mean, there's man.
Yeah,
and she's been fun to get to know as well. So, and she's super easy to work with, and she's really loved. Like she kept saying in interviews, we did some interviews at Grand Cause, she kept saying, you know, they gave me so much freedom and I just love that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we gave you freedom cause we trusted you to just say, hey, just do whatever you want with this because we know it's going to be awesome. And we've never been disappointed.
Yeah.
Always cool. Exceeds our expectations.
It's good. That's, I mean, that's a sign of a good artist that you can, someone that, you can just say go, and you can have that confidence that whatever they give you is going to be pure gold. Yeah.
Exactly. It's yeah, cool. It's really good. So, played anything different lately?
Gosh, let's see. What have I do real quick, I want to remind builders also about Outlawed.
Yes, that is coming to a close soon.
Yeah, Outlawed is going to be closing up soon. So it hasn't funded yet as of this recording. I think it's going to be funded by the time let me rephrase that. It better be funded by the time this episode goes up.
Yes.
Okay. That's all I have to say about that. It better be funded. And I want to hit that first stretch goal cause I want that deputy badge.
Yeah. And the second stretch goal was he put up two, didn't he?
He did. Yeah.
I don't remember what it was, but it was good.
Was the second one? I think it was the five player expansion. Was the second
it was?
One?
Yeah. Yeah. And he made those guys. He made those really easy to hit.
Yeah.
So
there's no
better
excuse.
Hit those because I want to play with five players.
Yes.
Because four players is enough, but five players would be better.
Would be crazy good.
That would be somebody else to enjoy the game with you.
Yes.
Again, I've said it before, so I'll say it again. It's the best bluffing game I've ever played.
Absolutely.
Without
exception.
Yeah. It is so good. If you go to the Kickstarter, if you want to see Rob and I being Rob and I, we play a live game.
You can see our stupid faces.
Yeah. With Lisa, Lisa Green Couch, as they call her.
Mm-hmm.
We play a live game with her recorded by Jason and it's really fun. So,
yes. It was great.
And it gives you a really good idea of how awesome that game is.
And it's still fun. Like I will play that game at the drop of a hat.
Yep.
And I will play it six times in a row and love every minute of it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, come on. Let's get this thing funded.
Well, shout out to one other game. Cause, yeah. So another game, I'm going to just say it, but you can go check. I think it'll be done by now, is Go Nuts for Donuts, which I'm super excited about.
Yeah.
It's Daily good. Magic Games. Yeah, the artwork is really good.
It's really fun. That's not chibi, but there's a name for that.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's very Sushi Go inspired, though. Yeah. Like, it looks like a donut version of Sushi Go. I'm sure the game plays differently. I don't even care. I saw the donuts and somebody referenced it's kind of like Sushi Go, and then I bought the game.
Sure.
And that one's doing really well too. It's got a shorter Kickstarter, so there's a little more need to back fast. So they are a couple thousand ahead of us, so good for them.
Yeah,
because we've got a lot more time.
Yeah.
But the other game I wanted to give a shout out to is Problem Picnic, which just hit Kickstarter today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that looks good.
It's a little dexterity game where you're using different types of dice as ants at a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done by Kids Table Gaming, the people who did same people who did Food Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very good people. So check that out. Just check that Kickstarter out.
Do it.
So I was all over it.
Yeah, cool. All right. That's enough for plugs for today, I suppose.
Yeah, so games, though.
But yeah, what have I played? I want to think. Gosh,
you played Onitama.
You played Onitama? Yeah, we talked about that. Did we talk about that when we recorded?
We talked a little bit about it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so not a whole lot since Grand Con. Onitama, you bought a copy of that, right?
Yes, I haven't opened it yet.
You know, okay. Man, that's great. That's it's a little chess inspired kind of thing, but much, much simpler than chess.
Yep.
And each player has basically
two moves they can make.
Yeah, so you have it's a 5x5 square board. And each player has essentially four pawns and one king. Okay. But they don't move according to the rules of pawns and a king. That's just kind of representative of what the pieces look like.
Right.
You know, there's a whole deck of movement cards, but you shuffle that up and start of the game, you deal out five movement cards and that's it for the entire game. All the rest of the cards go back to the game box. You give two to each player and the fifth one is on the side. And those movement cards, describe how you can move a piece on your turn. So any one of those five pieces can move according to the diagram that is shown on the card. And it's typically you move forward one space, move to left one space, move diagonal one space, move back one space. It's some variation thereof, right? And I'm oversimplifying it.
Right.
There is a little bit more to it than that, but just to get the message across. And so you decide which piece you're going to move, and then you take that move. And then after you're done with that, that movement card that you just used, you pick it up and you put it on the side of the board, and then you take that fifth card and put it back in front of you. So now that fifth card that was not used the previous time is an available movement to you on your next turn.
Yep.
Then your opponent goes and they do the same thing. They use one of their two movement cards, and the one they move, they pick up and they put on the side, and then they pick up the extra movement card, the one that you used on your first turn.
Right.
And the goal of the game is either to capture your opponent's king by moving one of your pieces onto it, or to get your king to your opponent's center square at the opposite end of the board.
Right.
That action of it's, you know, you need to think about ahead about how am I going to use this movement. I can see what moves my opponent has, so I want to think about what his options are, but also remember that the move that I use right now is going to be in my opponent's hands in two turns.
Yep.
It's so simple and really, I want to say brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those simple games that, you know, just defies like, wow.
Yeah. Right. I wish I'd thought of that.
Yeah.
And also the packaging is spectacular.
The magnetic box is great.
Right. Yeah. It's great. So I highly recommend that. Onitama, I have enjoyed it very much. Christina, I played it a lot since I got back from Grand Con.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk about topic, eh?
Okay.
Shall we?
Sure.
So we're going to talk about
engine building.
So this came about because I've been playing a lot of Splendor, and Rob played Splendor and very much liked it.
I did.
I told
him
he would, and he did for sure.
It was good.
I actually told our friend Laura about it yesterday. I was like, dude, you're going to love this game. You should check it out.
Yep. So she's right up her alley too.
But so the idea, engine building, let's define engine building as we understand it. If we're wrong, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But this is how we understand it. So the idea of engine building is, throughout the game, you are building up, I'm trying to think of another word for engine. You're building up reserves or you're building up ability to do things in the game, right? And so, like, the way it works in Splendor is you're taking tokens that are gems and using those to buy gem places, like gem mines and stuff like that, and ships that have gems on them. And once you do that, when I spend those gems to buy a gem card, the gem card I just bought is now a permanent gem that I have, right?
Yeah.
So as I stack those up and go from having zero of those to, say, having 15 of those, suddenly I can be using this engine I've built, mm-hmm. right, to do these things. Deck building is a similar thing, mm-hmm. right? I only say that when I think of the way like I play Dominion, it mm-hmm. feels like an engine building because I'm basically giving myself better and better things I can do, right? Mm-hmm. So it has some similarities to that, but it's not exactly that.
I would say in an engine building game, you have certain number of actions that are available to you on a turn, and at its essence, you're spending those actions to acquire abilities that will make either do those actions for you for free in future turns or allow you to do more with your actions on future turns.
Yes, that's a good, you know, that's a good
kind
way
of
to describe
a broad perspective on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's not always just to do more stuff. Right. It's to do certain things sure. or make things better.
Always with the end goal of getting the most victory points or, you know,
right.
accomplishing
a certain task.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And there are a lot of engine building games out there. Splendor is a good example of one that's kind of very focused and very distilled to the essence of engine building.
Yep. I mean, that is literally the entire game.
Right.
Is building an engine. Yep. That's all you're doing.
One I've heard a lot of people talk about, I've not played it, is Steam Park. I've been told that it is a really good engine building game.
I've seen it. It looks really cool.
It looks great.
So,
yeah.
And it would make sense. It's Steam mm-hmm. Park and it's engine building. That's yeah. clever.
And there's a little bit of engine building in Saloon Tycoon.
Yep.
Not a ton, but in terms of that, every time you add a tile to your saloon, that's going to earn you one more gold per turn. And more gold means more power, more ability, more flexibility, more options. So in that way, there is a little bit of engine building. It's not generating resource cubes, supply cubes, you know, it's not
right.
But kind of on a basic level, you spend gold, and as a result of spending gold, you're going to get more gold later.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot lately. I kind of want to design an engine building game because I'm so enamored by it right now. Like,
sure.
What could I do?
Yeah,
to
do it.
You know, and I was trying to think of different themes you could apply that to and ways you could use that, right? To have engines be something other than, you know, like, I lost what I was going to say. To
job.
Have engines be, you know, something less abstract, right?
Mm-hmm.
And more, I mean, it could be like Engines, the engine building game or something like that. there, that would have been good for that Dice Hate Me contest. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone did engine building. Maybe someone did. I'm not sure.
Well, it certainly didn't win.
Right. So, well,
yeah.
There was a missed opportunity there then,
yeah,
I think.
Definitely.
Is what that was. Trying to think of, you know, one of the things I thought of that would be interesting is to be building an engine with a specific goal in mind, mm-hmm. right? Almost like a, say you're building a town, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're building like a fantasy town, not like in real estate, but different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got
not like a saloon in the Old West, but
right.
different.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So
okay.
When you're building this, you're building this fantasy town, but what you're really doing is you're bringing people into it and stuff, right? Like,
yep.
So
like
as you
Saloon Tycoon,
right? No.
Sorry.
No.
All right, I'm done.
The people that you're bringing in, so like soldiers, right? So like as I bring in more soldiers, I can do more. I can do more. If I bring in more explorers, I can explore further, right? With the end goal being, you've got in the center of the thing a dragon, right? And say it's one of five big bads, right? And you shuffle those around and randomly one gets put out, right? And then maybe there's smaller bad guys around the board, right? And what you're trying to do is the goal is you want to be the person to slay the dragon, right?
Okay.
So, but you can't possibly do that at the start of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You need to build an engine to be able to slay the dragon,
okay.
right? Kind of like the nobles that you get in Splendor, where once you build that engine, it just sucks the nobles in because they mm-hmm. want to come check you out because you're big and fancy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's, I like the idea of having that with an end goal in mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just to get X victory points, but to do something,
mm-hmm.
to complete a task, where, you know, another might be, maybe it's, so Salvation Road.
Yep.
That, would you consider that engine building?
Oh man, it's been a long time since I played it.
I mean, so the idea is you're stockpiling enough supplies to know that you can make it to
the destination. By acquiring a bunch of, by stockpiling a lot of supplies, does that then increase your ability to get more supplies?
It does not. So that is not engine building. Okay. Good point.
I wouldn't classify it that
good
way.
Good differentiation there.
Yeah.
So instead, yeah, I guess that if I am giving myself more and more options in my, with my people, right, to say I can now go exploring, or I can slay these monsters, or I can brew more ale. I don't know. Whatever the things I need to do to, well, that's actually kind of interesting. The idea that you have to upkeep your engine. Mm-hmm. So you're building this engine, but you have to upkeep it. Otherwise you lose portions of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fun too. And when your engine is like, is people, that sounds weird when you say it like that, but mm-hmm. when your engine are explorers and adventurers and stuff, that upkeep comes into play, like a Stone Age type thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have to be able to pay to keep them fed.
Jason, let me pause for a minute here and tell you about a book called His Majesty's Dragon. Okay.
I've heard of that.
It's a fantasy novel. It's absolutely excellent.
Okay.
Okay. It's a story about a Navy man, a Navy captain in the British Army during Napoleonic Wars. Okay.
Okay.
And, he happens to capture a French ship, and in the hold of the French ship, he finds a dragon egg. And that dragon hatches, while on his ship. And as dragons are known to do in this world, the first person that they come into contact with, they imprint upon. And then no one else could possibly become that dragon's rider, or the captain of that dragon.
Okay.
And so this Navy man, dyed in the wool, lifelong Navy man, has to abandon his responsibilities in the Royal Navy and join the Air Force to be the captain of this dragon. And that's just the basic setup of the game. Or excuse me, not the game, the book. And the thing about it is that when they say Air Force, they mean Air Force, the Royal Air Force, because it's basically like a dragon, depending on the size of the dragon, has a crew. And so when he's at full bore with this dragon, fully loaded, it's, you know, he's the captain, and he's got a first lieutenant that's handing his orders out, and he's got, you know, gunners with rifles stationed on the dragon, and there are bombardiers, and there's a team of guys that run around that are just there to repair the harness that holds all these guys on there as they go, and there are medics that attend to the wounds of the dragon. It's a full crew, a full ship's crew, that ride on the back of this dragon into battle, and it's the world that they build around that is spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. It's a wonderful, wonderful idea. I'm surprised nobody did it sooner. It's one of those things where, like, oh, duh, why didn't anybody else think of that?
So is this a newer book?
It's I think it's in the last 5 to 10 years. I'm not exactly sure. And, of course, I'm an idiot, and the author's name is escaping me now. But it's called His Majesty's Dragon. I've only read the first one. There's a series there. I think there's 3, maybe 4
So there's
books.
Multiple dragons, or just the one?
Well, yeah, right. Dragons are a thing in this world.
Okay.
Okay. And this is just focused on the one captain and the one dragon. It's kind of their story.
But there's other dragons that fight?
Yeah. I mean, there's an air force, right? They have many dragons that are involved in air battles.
Okay. So when you first set it up, I thought it was like, there are no dragons, and he finds a dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And now he has a dragon, and it's like him with airplanes and stuff.
Like, dragons are still, they're not common. They're rare in the world, but everybody knows that dragons are a real thing. And yeah.
So basically like the real world, right? We all know dragons are a real thing.
Sure.
You just don't see them very often.
Yeah.
Right? That's basically how it works. Yeah.
Anyway. So when you talk about engine building and dragon, it made me think of that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's an idea, right? You have your dragon, and you could be building, and your dragon has a certain effectiveness rating in combat, but as you train the dragon, it develops new skills, and then you also, and as the dragon grows, it becomes big enough, and it can handle a bigger harness and handle more crew. They make it more effective in battle, but also the dragon has the ability to heal because of the medics that are on board, and on and on and on and on. It's, you know, building an engine of war kind of thing.
An engine of dragon.
Yeah.
Dragon engine.
Right. So I
feel like I can't steal the idea of building an engine in a dragon.
Well, you probably can't, but so. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
But it's a good book. You should read it. Builders, you should read that book. It's good.
I want to read that book now.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The audiobook.
Okay.
It's good too. Yeah, so. Yeah, that got us a little off topic. I apologize.
It did,
but I mean, the idea is there. Is there, right? It's, so let's ask this question: why is engine building fun?
Because it allows you to get better throughout the game, right? So it also increases complexity in the game.
Yep.
Naturally,
uh-huh.
Without having to front load you with too many things, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Though I'd argue in Splendor, that's probably not the case because it's pretty simple the
whole way
simple.
Through.
But
again, Splendor is pretty dialed in, pretty focused approach to that,
that
right?
That is the whole mechanic, is engine building, is the entire mechanic of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. It makes you feel like you're constantly developing, you're constantly doing better. Every turn, you're more powerful than the turn before. Every turn, you're able to do something cooler than you were able to do last time.
Right.
And that's powerful, and that's exciting, and that feels really good.
Right.
Feels really good. It also, I think if the game is, if the components are presented well and presented and balanced appropriately, then your success depends a lot on your own skill at building that engine and making the right decisions of what to build at what time.
Right.
You know, and it's not true for every game, but kind of inherently it reduces randomness. Unless randomness is deliberately built into that game.
Right.
That's a broad generalization. That's probably not a safe thing for me to say, honestly, but as I imagine it.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm having all these ideas.
Okay.
I'm not going to share them.
Oh.
I want to think through them.
Well, you have to pitch a game on this episode, so you got to share something.
Oh, my
gosh. Did you forget about that part of the podcast?
I forgot about that part of the podcast. I
forgot that that's half of what we do.
So concerned about figuring out a topic, I forgot that we had to pitch games.
Had to pitch a game.
Well, crap.
Do you want to do a Board Gameizer challenge?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do. Let's do that.
All right. It's about that time to move on anyway. Let me get this up on my phone here. You know what? The one that popped up here, I'm okay with. You ready?
All right.
Okay. So, mechanic is stock holding.
Okay.
Sounds
terrible already.
The theme is...
Sounds dreadful.
Philosopher's Quarantine. You know what? Maybe this is not good.
No. That's all right. Keep going.
It's
keep
okay?
going. Yeah.
All right.
You got me with Philosopher's Quarantined.
Okay. And the victory condition is successful infiltration.
Okay. All right. All right.
Okay.
So this game is about... some philosophers who have been locked in a room, right?
Okay.
And the goal is, so the philosophers have been locked in a room, right?
Yeah.
And and the goal is to be the person who is selected to leave the room.
Mm.
That's how you win. Okay.
Okay.
But of course. That means everyone else is turning their back on themselves to let you go out of the room, right? So because of that, we're going to call that infiltration, whether or not that's
whatever,
that, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're going to call it. So so that's the idea, right? It's like everyone's a traitor. You're just trying to screw everyone over so you can get out.
Yeah.
So stockholding. So these philosophers, as philosophers might want to do, they decided that the most rational way to handle this would be to give everyone the power to vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they said, we can't just have a democracy. We can't just have one vote to one vote because, of course, what would happen? Everyone would vote for themselves.
Sure.
And then...
I would.
So, right. So instead, they came up with another idea, which was that everyone gets 7 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, and there's actually 7 rounds in the game. And at the end of every round, you vote.
Okay.
Here's the catch. You can't vote for yourself,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can't vote for yourself, but you want to get everyone else to vote for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's never known if someone actually voted for you or not. How would that work? Let me think.
I got it. Ready for this? This
I'm ready.
This is good.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
All right. All right. Okay. I got it. All right. Okay. Sorry. I'm just getting stuck here. So every player has 14 cards, right? So four player game, every player has 14 cards. And every turn they're going to have two cards in their hand. Okay.
Got it.
Yo, this is good, man. This is,
I'm excited.
Trademarked.
This I'm excited. I like
so,
this going.
So one card has a vote on it. One card has a check mark, right?
Like
check. The other one has an X. Green check, red X, right? As a symbol, I just wrote it on some screws. And the cards look like scrap paper, right? Because that's cool. Maybe it's like napkins or something. I don't know. So on your turn, at the end of your turn, something's going to happen. At the end of your turn, you have to vote. And you're going to give a card to two players face down.
Mm-hmm.
And the only player that gets to see what card they got is the player who got it.
So you don't know what you're giving to somebody else.
You do know.
You do know.
Okay. You know.
All right.
But so if there's three of us playing, for instance, say there's four of us, right?
Okay.
There's four imaginary people. It's two sitting with us.
Yeah.
If the imaginary person over here at the end of the turn gives a card to you and I, the player who gives it to us knows what they gave.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what they gave too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I know that I got a check because he voted. Of course he voted for me. He didn't vote for you,
well,
schmuck.
Yeah, I know.
So, right?
Yeah.
Of course you know because you got the card.
Sure.
But the other guy doesn't know who just got the vote, right?
Uh-huh.
So now you've created a place where not everybody has all the information, right? Except for times that by four, because we're all doing that at the end of the round, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to determine who the people are actually voting for.
Yep.
And so that you're not overloading one person with votes, right?
Uh-huh.
So does that always end in a tie? Can that always end in a tie? I don't think so. So that would be everybody. There would be 7 rounds, 28, 52 cards would be given out. But only 20 of them would be votes. So 28 divided by 4, 7 times 4 is 28. So there's a chance for a tie. So there's got to be some sort of tiebreaker. I don't know. We'll figure that out later. Whatever. So anyways, so that's what I have so far, right? So how do you there's got to be a way to convince people to vote for you. And it's got to be very philosopher-like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a Schrodinger's cat crap or something, mm-hmm. right? Like, how do I intone to other people that maybe they should vote for me? So it's going to have to be about giving misinformation somehow. Okay. So this game has 10,000 components.
10,000.
It feels like, right? Because the other thing I would think is, I was trying to think. Okay. So, gosh, how does that work? So here's what I'm trying to think, but I'm not sure how it works, right?
Okay.
It would be cool if every round then, after they get their vote, the player has, I'm just going to say it and then we'll just assume there's 10,000 cards in the game and maybe there's a better way to do this. But
okay.
It would be cool if at the end of the round, each player had to be able to show a card with the number that they got, the number of votes, their new total amount of votes, right?
Okay.
So when they do that, so like you have a card, right? Oh, maybe you just write on something. I don't know. But let's say you write on something, right? So okay. I write on a piece of paper. I have 7 votes, right? Seven votes to leave, right? So I write that down and then I shove it into a thing, right? And then it gets shuffled up and then they're laid out, right? So now there's 4 of us. I know what mine is and I have to be honest, right? I have to write the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I know what mine is, but I don't know what yours are, right? So it's a deduction game, I guess. I'm trying to figure out then if one is 7 and everybody else has 2 votes, right? Who the heck has 7 votes and how do we stop them from having 7 votes, right? Do you see what I mean?
I think I'm getting there.
So, meaning like because I could get 3 votes in a round, basically, right, is what could happen here. Because if all the opponents give me a vote, I now have 3 votes at the end of the round.
Okay.
So after a couple rounds, I got 7 votes. Everybody else has very few votes because they all keep coming to me. So if we're revealing how many we have, but we can't reveal the exact, the which person actually has them. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
So another way to do that might be revealing how many cards you have, because you're not always going to get a card on every turn, right? But that might be too limited of information.
Could each player just start a 2 stacks face down in front of them?
That's the next thing I thought was, if it were face down, you wouldn't know what the stacks were, but you'd know.
I know he's got 3 of those and 1 of those, but I don't know which is which.
Oh, that's good. Because then you could spread them out so you can see, yeah, how many of each I have. Uh-huh. But every round, I get to pick those cards up, shuffle them together,
right,
look at what I got, resort them back out. So unless only one person gave me a card, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there has to be no table talk, because otherwise it would be too easy to be like, all right, you give one to him. Let's not give one to Jason this turn.
Yeah.
Let's only give one to Jason and see what happens, mm-hmm, so we can determine how many he has, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's got to be more to the game than that, but I feel, yep, like that's actually a decently solid base that could be. There's some thinkiness to that, right? There's some bluffing, mm-hmm, there's some deduction. It uses voting in a different way, and I like voting as a mechanic. But how? There has to be a way for players to maybe earn votes or something like that. What if there was a way? What if there was a pool of, what if the philosophers also put a pool of yes votes in the center or something? Because philosophers are weird.
yeah, philosophers in prison are, sure.
They're quarantined. They're not necessarily.
Oh, sorry. You're right. Quarantined. Yeah.
So the one in the center, somehow you can win those. Okay. Here's another way to give information out, right? I'm not sure how this would work, but each round it turns from the left to the right, and you have to give a card. Yes. You have to give a card to the player on the left, right? They would ask for a card, right? You have your stacks out, and you would say, Rob, I'll take a card from your left stack. So you would slide it here. We go all the way around. Everybody chooses, right? We slide it all out. At the same time, everybody picks up the card, looks at it, can't say anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that now gives me information about which stack was which if I'm paying attention. But of course, the next time we turn around and go the other way.
Yeah.
And then the next time we pass across. So now it makes it hard to track, right?
Because,
mm-hmm, you don't want to make it easy to track, you know?
Yeah.
I want a game that only Matt Loomis can win, is basically what I'm saying.
only a robot.
Oh, that's not nice. Matt's not a robot.
He's not.
He has the brain capacity of a robot and the processing power of a robot. But, yeah. Anyways.
So what's the win condition?
At the end of 7 rounds.
Okay. Whoever has the most votes.
Whoever has the most votes gets out.
Gets to escape the quarantine.
Yep.
Okay. And if there's a tie, then there's a tiebreaker of some kind.
There's a tie, then they all murder each other. No, if, okay, there's a tie, it could be least number of...
no votes.
Yeah, right. So, okay, if there's a tie there, then everybody gets murdered.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Or you could do you could do if there's a tie,
mm-hmm,
Las Vegas. If there's a tie, they negate themselves.
Oh yeah.
That's actually kind of awesome.
That might be all right, yeah.
So the guy who got like one yes vote gets to go because everyone, sure, else tied.
Sure.
So there's something to that.
I think there's something in there that you could pursue.
That could be a really fun deduction game.
Sure.
Like that, like a silent pokery deduction game, right? Where, yeah, you're just sliding things back and forth. I would love to have a way to bet on something, but I don't know what that would be.
Yeah. Yeah. You could bet a card from one of your stacks, but I don't know what you'd be betting on. And the winner would win the pot.
Right. Whether or not you'd want to win the pot would be the question, right?
Right. And you don't know because you don't know what people threw in there.
Right.
I don't know.
But why would people ever, to follow Matt's logic, why would people ever put anything but an X in there?
Well, that's true. You're right. I don't know why anybody would.
So, okay. There's stuff to think about there, but
yeah.
Hey, I feel really good about that start. That was a good Board Game Miser. Thank you, Board Game Miser. Way to go.
There you go.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this puppy up.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtgjslingerlime@poorly_designed. Like us on Facebook and call our Google voice number 770-TEL-BTG and buildinggamepodcast.com. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Hello. Oh, there it is. Hiya.